I Eat Green with Bhavani, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Progressive Radio Network. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and it's another beautiful Wednesday, even though the weather outside is not so beautiful. It's raining, and it's watering my garden, so I don't have to, so that's a good thing. I have another exciting show for you today. I have a guest in the studio with me, Jared Koch, who is founder of Clean Plates, both a book and a website that can direct you to really good, sustainable food. So I'll talk to you more about him as the show goes on. But I just wanted to talk about what's going on in the garden, what's going on in the world, and our area having to do with food. This weekend, Anne and I, my co-chair for Slow Food, we had the opportunity to speak at a Unitarian Fellowship out on Long Island. And we talked about our slow food movement and sustainable food movement. And it was really so well received. And it's so nice to have the opportunity to actually put all of our thoughts into, down on paper and in one place and just really bring back home and share with a large audience why it's so important to know where our food's coming from. And it was really clear that for so many people, they get into the habit of needing to just grab food and don't really have the time or make it a priority to think about where their food comes from. And we had the opportunity to really spell out why it was so important, why it's important to know where our food's coming from, to know how the people who are growing our food are taking care of the planet, taking care of the earth, adding nutrients to our soil and not depleting our soil. And it was just really nice to talk about that again. And another thing that also came up in this little talk was what actually happens when people cook food for each other. So often, we hear about quantum physics. We hear about mind over matter. We hear about, the energy that you can't see. Yet people don't usually take it to the next step and think about when you actually are preparing food, what is that secret ingredient of love that goes into the food when you're actually preparing it, and how that secret ingredient is not going to be replicated not only just in a fast food restaurant, but even in any restaurant, even in Whole Foods, which does a great job of putting together good food. Is the chef in the kitchen really like thinking about you and your family when they're making the food? Are they really putting that love into it? When it's just a job, it's a job. And very often, you're just whipping up the food, but there's that secret ingredient that happens, that visualization of the people you're thinking about when you're preparing the food for them. And that secret ingredient, that love factor that goes into the food, really helps, adding nutrients and vitality to the food that we're eating. And then when we sit down and share that food with our family and friends, the love and the energy that comes out of that is really very special. So, even though I appreciate everybody choosing good restaurants, and that's what we'll talk about with Jared a little bit into this show, that you want to pick restaurants where you know where the food's coming from, how important it is to be cooking at home. And another thing that I talked about, which a lot of times people don't think about, is when you invite people over to dinner. So many women I know get all frantic about it, and they're nervous, and they have a lot to do, and they have to shop, and they have to cook, and they have to clean, and they want everything ready when everybody walks in. And I'd like to propose that you actually make the cooking and bringing together of the meal the activity for the evening. I mean, people cooking together is so much more fun than cooking alone, just like gardening. When I'm alone in the garden, I mean, sometimes it's peaceful, but it's really a lot more fun when I have friends in the garden with me, and we're weeding together and telling stories and, you know, harvesting together. It's just, and canning together. It's so much more fun when you're doing it with people, especially people you love. And so invite friends over and make the activity making dinner. You know, yeah, get help washing the vegetables, chopping the vegetables, setting the table. Don't think everything has to be ready when everyone arrives. Do it and make that the activity. And then, you know, when it's finished, you can play a game and, you know, some cards or whatever. Make the activity being at home. And it's really special to do that. So what is new in my garden? Well, of course, my snow peas and my sugar snap peas are certainly coming up. I'm starting to, you know, they're starting to grab hold of the fencing. String beans I'm waiting for. They have not immersed yet from the soil. But I have lots of seedlings that I've started that, you know, I take in and out every day since I don't have my greenhouse. And they're really doing well. This past Friday, I had the Girl Scouts at my house planting lots of lettuce and arugula and lots of greens for the homeless, you know, as part, one of their projects is they wanted to grow some food that they could give to a food shelter. So at the same time, they wanted to see the results fast. So lettuce, you know, baby lettuce, only takes about 4 weeks to grow. So they were here last Friday, and we have it scheduled for them to come in a couple of weeks, and they'll harvest the lettuce, and they'll bring it to a mama's house, which is a home for unwed moms, you know, who are teenage moms, and bring them some fresh lettuce. So that's going to be a really great project. My garlic is, you know, doing great. I'm waiting for the scapes to appear. And this year, I don't know if those of you remember, last year I actually let the scapes go too long until little garlic bulbs formed at the end of the scapes. And then I found out the scapes then were too tough to eat. So I'm waiting, watching very closely this year so I can cut those scapes off right in the neck of time so that the energy can go back into the garlic bulbs and I can have some big heads of garlic as opposed to the little ones I had last year. Although I must say they are so delicious, and I'm still using the garlic from last year. I have not used it all up. I had that much. So, although I have to say, when I do cheat, I do buy already peeled garlic when I'm cooking for a lot of people. I save my own homemade garlic for when I'm cooking for me and my family and my friends. But when I'm cooking, you know, catering type cooking, and I'm cooking for 100, I just don't have the patience to peel all that garlic. So that's between you and me. So anyway, I would like to share a recipe with you before I introduce Jared to all of you. I made this last night for my family, and it was just so great and so easy to pull together really fast. And there's also a lot of different things you can do with this. So what I did last night was a whole wheat linguine with spinach, cherry tomatoes, and feta cheese. You know, instead of the spinach, you can add arugula, you can do broccoli rabe. I was going to throw in some artichoke hearts, too, but I just thought, you know, I wouldn't last night. But sometimes I do, and artichoke hearts are really great with it also. I threw in some pine nuts, which are great. So this is the recipe. You want to start with a pound of organic whole wheat linguine. If you need this to be gluten-free, you can always use brown rice pasta. I used one organic onion that I sliced into crescent moons, 1 pound of organic spinach, or arugula, like I said, 1 bunch of organic arugula. Oh, I put it in twice. Forgive me. I'll fix that before we put it on the website. So it's spinach or arugula. But if you want both, sure, why not? You're the chef. You can do whatever you want. You need some extra virgin olive oil, enough to coat the pan. And, you know, depending on how much oil you want to use, again, you can choose to use oil to start with the sautéing, and then at some point when you need more liquid, you can substitute some vegetable broth if you want to keep the oil down. 2 tablespoons of finely chopped garlic, 1/2 cup of toasted pine nuts, 1/4 cup of white wine, 2 tablespoons of chopped dill, 3/4 pounds of organic feta cheese, 1/4 pound of grated organic mozzarella cheese, this is a 1/4 pound, 1/2 pound. 1/4 cup of fresh chopped Italian parsley, and then save 1 tablespoon of that for garnish at the very end. Salt and pepper to taste, and then optional, 1 teaspoon of red pepper flakes if you want this to be a little spicy. So you're going to cook the pasta in some salted water. according to the directions, and of course make it al dente because it's so much better if the pasta is not really soft and mushy. And when the pasta is ready, you're going to drain it and just drizzle some olive oil on it and toss it. I like to not run cold water over it. A lot of people suggest running cold water over the pasta to stop the cooking right away. But I like to keep the starch on the pasta so that the sauce actually sticks to the pasta better. I find if I run it under water, then the whole sauce becomes a little watery. So just drain it and then add a little olive oil onto it, and that will prevent it from sticking together. Meanwhile, I'm going to coat the bottom of a wok with olive oil, saute the onions just for a few minutes, give it a little head start, then add the spinach or arugula. And you're just going to cook that for a few moments until it becomes wilted. Then you're going to add the garlic and keep stirring it. You want to make sure that the garlic doesn't burn. Garlic, as you probably know, can burn so quickly. And it just doesn't look so pretty in the sauce when it burns. And it doesn't taste as good either. So just keep stirring really well. And after a few minutes, you're going to add the cherry tomatoes. And I cut the cherry tomatoes in half. And that will give the sauce a little bit of liquid as well. And you're going to cook for a couple more minutes and then add the white wine. And if you need more liquid, like I said, you can add either some more olive oil or vegetable broth. You can also add a little bit of organic tomato sauce if you like. That's up to you, whether you want it to be just the sauce with the cherry tomatoes or whether you'd like to have a little bit more a tomato base in there. And if you're adding the red pepper flakes, this is also a good time to add that. And when the tomatoes are soft, you know, dump in the pasta and stir it up, and then you're going to add the feta cheese, the mozzarella cheese, the dill, the parsley, and the pine nuts, all at the last moment, and just toss it and put it into a large pasta bowl, garnish the top with fresh parsley, and of course season it with salt and pepper to taste, and that's it. It's, you know, you can really pull it together very quickly, and depending on what you're harvesting from the garden, you really can throw anything into this. You know, I have some fresh asparagus coming up in my garden that, you know, I used up actually, you know, a few days ago, so I didn't have any left. But asparagus would be great in this as well. So, you know, again, play with the recipes. One of the things I like to encourage everybody to do is really become comfortable in the kitchen and feel like you can substitute anything in and out. Just get creative. And if it's not great one time, you know, you learn from that. So, you know, don't be afraid to have fun with it. So, now I'd like to tell you a little bit about my guest and introduce Jared Koch to you. He put out this book called Clean Plates, Manhattan. And I know he has plans, I think, to expand and to go into the other boroughs and maybe even to some other cities. But he graduated from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition with certification by Columbia University's Teacher College in 2005, and he graduated from the Global Institute for Alternative Medicine in 2004. He's a health coach, a nutritional consultant, and certified yoga instructor with expertise in meditation, and he speaks fluently on the topics of nutrition and has spoken at, you know, organizations such as Google, Sony, Merrill Lynch, etc. He originally graduated from the University of Michigan, where he completed a pre-medical program while majoring in economics. And it goes on and on. He's, you know, this this clean plate project that he's been doing has really been quite successful. I know I've used the book myself a few times and was really, really pleased with the restaurants that I found. So I would like to introduce Jared now. He also does individual and group counseling to try to encourage people to eat healthier, as I do. So, you know, there's room for so many of us out there because so many people could use a little bit of help in that area. So there's plenty of work out there for all of us. And Jared, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so glad you were able to come in. It's really always fun to have someone actually sitting across from me and sharing the space with somebody. So what led you to create Clean Plates? How did that get started?
So, I mean, I'll, I guess, take you back in time a little bit. I, as you said, I graduated from University of Michigan. I was pre-med, and I also majored in economics. And when I graduated, I was accepted into some New York area medical schools. I was planning on going, but over the summer, Michigan lets out a little early, lets out in like the spring and like April, so I had a long summer break, and I was helping my brother in a business that he had recently started, and I kind of got caught up in that, and then I was kind of contemplating if I wanted to take off a year, because I just knowing that if I went to medical school, that was really what I was going to be doing for the rest of my life. And so at the time I decided, you know what, let me just have a different experience, do something else before I go to medical school, and I could help my brother in his business. So I decided to do that. That year ended up turning into 11 years, much to the dismay of my parents. But it was a great entrepreneurial experience. I loved it. I learned a ton. But at a point, I started to realize that what I was doing wasn't my passion, and that I was really kind of my purpose was about making money, and that just wasn't fulfilling on a deeper level. And I seized an opportunity to sell my share in the business. It was about 10 years ago, and I didn't really know 100% what I was going to do. I was considering going back to medical school, but I didn't know after being away from school for so long if I could actually study again. I was also transitioning out of the business, and I didn't know how long that would take. And so what I decided to do was take some courses in nutrition just as a transition. And at the time, I also had some personal digestive issues that were chronic, and I just thought that they could be related to food. Who knew? And so once I started studying nutrition, I just realized I just became extremely interested, and I was fascinated, and I realized, like, you know, wow, how uneducated I am on the topic. And again, this is 10 years ago, so things have changed a lot since then, but just how uneducated, you know, we were as a culture. And I just started to really see, like, wow, this is really a foundational issue to so many problems we face, obviously, from personal health to environmental impact, which we're learning more and more, to, you know, just social justice issues with farmers, and then also even more and more we're realizing on an economic level how much of an impact the whole food system has. So I just became incredibly passionate about, you know, learning more, and I just kept, you know, studying. I did some different programs, and then about 5-6 years ago, I started a part-time practice working one-on-one with individuals, and I didn't really, to be honest, know what I wanted to do at that point, but I just became more and more passionate about really figuring out a way to, how could I contribute to change on a broader scale? I knew there needed to be change in these areas, and so I just started really observing really closely to people in general, but also the clients that I was working with, like what actually was working, what was actually getting these people to change. And, you know, I started to see that, of course, it's extremely important to educate people and make them more aware, clear up a lot of the confusion about, you know, about eating healthier. And it's extremely important to support people in their journey. Just change is difficult no matter what it is. And so it's important to, you know, to kind of help people through that process and to understand that process of change. But what I started to realize, what the one thing that was working most consistently was just simply giving people these practical resources. Like, you know, hey, here's this great product that I tried. It's healthy. It tastes delicious. Or, you know, here's this great restaurant. It's right near where you work. The food's delicious. I checked it out. They source from really good places. It's really good quality stuff. You know, you should try it. And, you know, my client would come back 2 weeks later, you know, oh my God, I tried that restaurant. I ate there 3 or 4 times in the last 2 weeks. It was amazing. I'm going to eat there a lot from now on. And so they would literally be putting different and better food in their body. Which, you know, ultimately, the more and more people that do that, that has a broad impact on, it has obviously on their own personal health, but it actually has an impact across the board on our economy, on our planet. And so, so for me, it was like, how do you actually get people to change? Because you often hear so many times, oh, I should eat healthier. People kind of know they should eat their vegetables. But how do you actually get people to make a different choice when they're putting food into their mouth? And so that led me to the concept of clean plates. Ultimately, what I was doing is I was collecting lists of restaurants, both for myself, because, you know, to your point earlier, I think it's incredibly important to eat at home, of course, and that's ideal, because you have complete control over, you know, the ingredients you're using, and there's, you know, I think there's a whole creative aspect of it and a community aspect to it. But the truth is, and especially in large cities, it's part of the culture to eat out a lot, and so I felt it was incredibly important to kind of make that easier for people. And I started to also, personally, I love to eat out, and I was very intent on finding places that were using good quality ingredients. And so I would keep a running list for myself. I would share that with my clients. And then at one point I shared it with a young lady who was my client, and she's like, oh my God, this list is amazing. You know, you should sell this. And I'm like, nah, I don't really want to sell it. I just, you know, I'm just trying to help people. But it got my wheels spinning, and basically what evolved out of this is we started as a book, which, as you said, is called Clean Plates Manhattan. And the idea behind it is it was really just a natural extension of my practice. The whole front half of the book is my philosophy on nutrition and eating healthier, which we can get into more detail as we go on. And then the second half of the book is really a compilation. We did a lot of research. We set strict criteria of all of, like, the healthiest, tastiest, and most sustainable restaurants in Manhattan.
And who's we?
I had a couple of different people working with me. I mean, when the project initially started, I worked very closely with a young lady, Alex Van Buren, who is a great writer, and so she actually, and a food critic, and so we went to all the restaurants together, and she wrote all the actual restaurant reviews, and because it was also very important for me to not just say, hey, these restaurants are healthy restaurants, because the truth is there's a lot of healthy restaurants that don't necessarily taste that great, and I think it's kind of contributes to the problem, because then it gives people the impression like, well, eating healthier is kind of boring or tasteless. And so we really wanted to point people to places that were actually also delicious. And
that's so true. I know as a vegetarian, for so often people say, what vegetarian restaurant do you like? And I truly, you know, recommend an Italian restaurant that you can eat vegetarian at, a Thai restaurant that you can eat vegetarian at, a curry restaurant, Indian restaurant. Because very often when you go to the traditional restaurants, you're going where they know what they're doing. You know, they do what they do really well, and then you just eat vegetarian in that culture, food culture.
Right.
So often the vegetarian restaurants, because I cook vegetarian at home, they are just not up to par. They're not as good as what I cook at home. And so if I'm going to go out and spend the money, you know, I want it to be really good.
Good food. No, yeah. Of course. I think the good news is that a lot, I think nowadays the standards are a lot higher, and so there are a lot more of the vegetarian restaurants that are opening are paying more attention to the actual, what's the word I'm looking for? But kind of the quality of the cooking, the gourmetness, quote-unquote, of the food. And, mm-hmm. You know, you could even see some of the raw foods restaurants or, you know, some of the higher-end ones are bringing in chefs from some of the top restaurants to actually prepare the food. So I think the standard is actually improving, which is mm-hmm. good. And important.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And so what is the criteria that you use to actually, you know, come up with this list?
Sure. So, I mean, we really set a wide variety of criteria to look at. You know, I feel that there's a lot of people have different kind of healthy eating interests, and we didn't really want to take a very dogmatic approach. We wanted to be very open and kind of just informative and say, hey, if you're interested in eating raw food or vegan food or vegetarian food, or if you're interested in eating meat, or if you have gluten-free, you know, this is where you could get it in the
right.
city. And so kind of one of our main criteria was if a place uses animal products and sells animal products, then at a minimum all of the animal products had to be 100% hormone and antibiotic free. We were ideally looking for places that were using animals that were grass-fed, pasture-raised, coming from small local farms. We were looking into kind of the percentage of organic and or local produce that restaurants were using, you know, again, ideally coming from small local farms, pesticide free. And then we were also looking into, you know, what are the quality of oils that the restaurants are using? What are the quality of salts? What type of sweeteners? We also looked into kind of menu selection. So, because you could have even, let's say, a vegan restaurant or an all organic restaurant, but then, you know, all the foods could be fried and there's not a lot of actual like vegetables on the menu. And can you actually get a good quality Whole Foods meal at this restaurant? You know, is there enough options? And so we kind of looked into this wide variety of criteria and to kind of find the best places in the city in all these different categories.
Mm-hmm. And what do you know the book that Slow Food put out, The Snail of Approval?
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with their scenario.
How is your book different than, you know, Snail of Approval, I think, kind of goes by that as well, kind of looking for local.
So, yeah.
What makes your book stand out?
Well, I think they're doing a great job also, so not to knock them in any way, but I think we're a bit more comprehensive. And we actually do. We have a much more thorough vetting process and research process. So, you know, we don't just look and it's not just, you know, again, like if a restaurant is using animal products, it's not, you know, because a lot of times I've maybe seen restaurants that have a slow snail of approval, and maybe they have some of their animal products that are, you know, that are well sourced or, you know, some produce, but not necessarily all. And so it's a little more challenging for some as a customer to know exactly what they're doing. Like we get down into more detail and are more comprehensive. Plus, we also look beyond just the sourcing into like, you know, does this place have gluten-free options? Is there naturally sweetened dessert? So we go into kind of other healthy kind of concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we go forward, because of the ability of the mobile, we're coming out with a mobile app and our website, we're actually going to get down to, like, actually, you know, menu-level suggestions for people and, you know, just really kind of make it very easy for people to find what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the beginning of the book, you have, you know, ways to use this book, five different precepts.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about those.
Sure. So, you know, kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, I think it was important as I work with my clients and as I was writing this book to really, like, how do we, the topic is often can seem very confusing because there's always, you know, if you pay attention to the media, every day there's another research report that conflicts the one from the day before. And so people are genuinely confused about the whole topic of nutrition and eating, which, and, you know, and understandably so. And so what happens ultimately is that because they're confused, they end up in like a situation of paralysis or inaction. They don't really do anything because they're confused. They don't know what's right. And so because I've been studying the topic for so long, and just like, and one of the things I was really thinking about is how do you kind of just organize the topic in a way that just makes it very rational, very simple to understand, and just kind of a guiding philosophy. And the way I presented it was into these five precepts. And the first one is really the underlying philosophy, which it sounds somewhat simple, but if you really pay attention, it's not really the way we think about it in a mainstream way. You know, typically from a mainstream way, everybody's looking for kind of a quick fix and the perfect way to eat. So, you know, so they could lose weight and they just want to know, hey, how do I eat? What do I eat? But ultimately, as I got deeper into studying and researching, what you start to realize as you study all these different philosophies and you start to see that there's really this theory emerging called bioindividuality, which ultimately means that there's no perfect way to eat for every human being for a variety of reasons, which I'd be happy to get into. It really, you know, like your diet is going to be different than my diet. What's right for my body is going to be different than what's right for you. Mm-hmm. And so we do have to take personal responsibility in some way and pay more attention to what foods actually work for us and not necessarily just look for like somebody else to tell us exactly what's right. So that's kind of the underlying philosophy, and it's a much different way of looking at it than constantly looking for what's this perfect diet, what's the perfect diet that I should be eating.
Well, also one thing I tell my clients a lot is because it's always changing, and like you said, you know, you can find some report to support whatever you want to do.
Right.
You know, you can rationalize anything.
Right.
I'm very good at that.
Me too.
So, you know, so I really take the stance that, you know, you want to try to just eat balanced and not too much of the same thing. Really just keep the variety going because, you know, people say you shouldn't have any coffee. But then you see another report that says, you know, coffee is good for you.
Right.
It reduces breast cancer or, you know, or that you shouldn't eat any oils. And then you see that, you know, you need some of the omega fatty acids. And then, you can find so many different conflicting things that if you just make sure whatever you eat is of a top quality.
Absolutely.
And then eat a variety.
Right.
And don't become too dogmatic, you know. And that's one of the things. And you don't want to become judgmental. And you want to be kind to yourself. So that if you eat something that you don't think is so great for you one day, it's okay. Love yourself and move on. You know?
Right.
And to really eat all the colors of the rainbow. That's one thing I tell people a lot. Eat a lot of different colors. Because as you eat the different colors, you're getting different kinds of vitamins. But don't become too stuck in one thing. You know, fish, which used to be really considered very healthy, now there's mercury in this kind, and there's, you know, this one's not sustainably fished well. And there's, you know, aside from getting the guide to really try to purchase fish that is sustainably caught, you know, wild and not in threat of extinction, Aside from that, you still want to vary it so
right.
that, you know, if one's high in PCBs, one's high in mercury, one's high in, you know, another thing, you know, you're getting a variety. And you don't want to get locked into any one thing. And I say that same with, you know, if you're going to eat dairy or if you're going to eat, you know, you want to eat a lot of the fresh vegetables and just balance the other things, not too much of anything. You know, and then you're kind of covering yourself.
Right. No, I think we have very similar philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, because that is kind of the following four precepts after bioindividuality is much, very much based on what you're talking about. It's no matter what you're eating, kind of the foundation should be real foods, whole foods, natural foods, what, you know, what we as humans have evolved to eat. So a lot of vegetables, fruits, nuts and seeds, like that's the most nutrient-dense foods available to us. So we want that to be the foundation of what we
the
eat.
The bulk.
The bulk of what
mm-hmm.
we eat, exactly. And then even within that, you want to eat primarily vegetables, you know, vegetables, to your point, a variety, different colors, because each color actually correlates to different beneficial properties. And
mm-hmm.
and also, just even from a sensitivity standpoint, it's like when we eat the same foods too often, that's often when we'll, our bodies will develop a sensitivity to them. So it's very important to just kind of have variety in those foods. And then kind of a big part of the philosophy, which also in terms of like dairy and other animal products, is if you are choosing to eat those, then eat of the highest quality. So, you know, again, going back to what I was saying.
And not too much.
And I think it's a combination, when I talk about animal products, I think it's a combination of eat of the highest quality, so as if they were raised in their natural environment, to keep it simple, you know, grass-fed, exposed to fresh air, to sunlight, so the animals are as healthy as possible.
Exercise,
exactly. And then in moderation, like you're saying, so quantity, making sure, you know, it doesn't, a piece of steak doesn't have to be the size of the whole plate. And then also, I think what often gets overlooked is even cooking methods are important. You know, when you kind of char meat, it creates certain kind of carcinogenic compounds. So, you know, cooking with the right cooking methods is important. You know, so I think if you do these things, you're having a much healthier product than if you don't,
mm-hmm.
and which makes a big difference. And then if you kind of supplement that with high quality vegetables and you're actually, you know, you could have a very well-balanced, good, healthy meal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing, kind of the last precept, is to really kind of significantly, you know, reduce your intake a lot of kind of stimulating foods, processed foods, chemicalized foods. So these foods that we really haven't evolved to really be eating and that cause a lot of problems in the body. And then when you do eat these foods, like you're saying, maybe if you're having some coffee, actually eat very high quality, you know, kind of choose high quality versions of these foods. And I think if you do that, you actually have a very well balanced, you know, eating pattern. You're eating a lot of vegetables and fruits, nuts and seeds, good quality animal products if you eat them. If, you know, if you're vegetarian or vegan and you want to consume good quality vegetarian protein. And you know, just reduce your intake of processed foods. And to your point, you know, I don't think we need to be perfect. If you have a meal that maybe isn't unhealthy, I call it the 80-20 rule in my book.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, at least 80% of the time, eat really good quality foods, nourish your body. And then your body's equipped to deal with, you know, some indulgences, and
right.
you don't have to, you know, I think the guilt and the stress over it, it causes a lot more problems than, you know, eating something that maybe, quote unquote,
that's
isn't so healthy.
So true. So listen, we're going to take a couple minute break, but I want you all to know out there that you are listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and we are live. So if you want to call in, the number here is 888-874-4888. And we'll see you in a couple minutes.
Radio Network. This is the number one radio station for progressive independent thinkers.
this is Eric Ochsner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz. Every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Don't miss out on Dr. Michio Kaku's weekly show, Explorations. Dr. Kaku is the only scientist with his own nationally syndicated radio show. Explorations is the program that explains complex physics with an accessible approach. So take an exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku, Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to discuss topics ranging from space exploration to stem cell research.
Rachel Trachtenberg for Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination. This is a show for everyone from our perspective as teens. Current events, art as life, music, and politics. Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination.
With co-host Julia Cunning.
Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Not bad.
Not too shabby.
Listening to the number one internet radio station for progressive minds, the Progressive Radio Network.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm very happy to have as my guest today Jared Koch, who is the author of this cute little book called Clean Plates, which is a guide to eating healthy in New York City. And he hopes to expand into some of the other boroughs and to L.A. soon. So it's a great little guide. It goes by neighborhood. It goes by food types. So it's very user-friendly, and I've, you know, really enjoyed, you know, finding some restaurants in here. So I'm really happy that he's here with us. Welcome back, Jared.
Thank you.
So one of the things I was asking you is, how do you keep up with all the new restaurants that open and close? And, I guess the website would be obviously more up-to-date, but
yeah.
It just seems like restaurants keep coming and going, and even... How do you keep up on to make sure that the quality remains the same? You know,
sure. No, great questions. We're actually working through how we improve on that process as we go forward. I think the good thing is more restaurants are opening than closing. There's definitely more and more people that are opening restaurants are realizing that there's a strong demand for, you know, better quality, well-sourced food. So there's a lot of new restaurants, which is great. It definitely causes me more work, but it's good overall. So we have a whole process where we keep a running list of places. We have a lot of people that let us know, some PR agencies, like when places are opening, and people are always just, customers are actually always sending us emails, hey, I just heard about this place open. So we're, through a bunch of different sources, we keep a running list, and we're consistently reviewing new places and adding to the website. So the website, of course, is going to always be more up to date. And over time, we want to kind of engage more with the community and have the community kind of let us know more about the places, and also, you know, kind of offer their reviews of the places. And we are working on systems of how to stay on top of, like, kind of do spot checks with the restaurant. Like, we plan on doing them internally, where we have the restaurants fill out these, like, fact check forms initially, and we're formatting them digitally now. And so we'll have them, we'll kind of every so often follow up with the restaurant to see what they're still doing.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like you could really have a restaurant review themselves. It's kind of like, you know, what the government does that we know doesn't really work.
Right, no, of course, exactly.
Right, you can't have people police themselves.
Right,
because
so, well, no, exactly
in general
not.
Don't aren't
honest. Don't do it well.
Right.
So, we have, like, when we go review the restaurants and when we initially do fact checks, we actually pose as customers throughout the whole process. At one point at the end, we do a formal fact check, let them know that we're publishing something with them in it, and we have them, the owner and chefs, fill out forms. We also are starting to get proof of sourcing. So we're coming up with different layers to make sure the story is legit, and same thing. We'll go back to the restaurant, throughout the year, and we'll just kind of ask questions, double check, make sure both kind of posing as customers and also formally as as our organization, we'll check. So we're mm-hmm. and we're working on building upon that. We want also the community to, as they're eating at these restaurants, encourage people to ask questions and then let us know what they're finding out, because the idea is you want the information to be consistent. But we're also figuring out ways and working on some ways that are in the works, so to speak, to actually kind of cross-check with farms and other distributors to make sure that, where, like, the food is coming from, where they say they're coming from.
Right, because I know people have called me, like, the food police, because I've worked, with schools trying to help the food service people improve school lunches, and we know how hard that is, especially because they're paid so little or they have so little money allotted for each meal.
Right.
So, I mean, they're really in a tough place. I sympathize, but, you'll spend 2 years finally getting iceberg lettuce out of the cafeteria and supply, having romaine lettuce.
Right.
And then you go away for a few weeks and you come back and there's the iceberg lettuce, or Debbie's baked goods,
right.
Like with these little packaged Debbie cakes or, and you get them away and then next thing you know, you're back and they're back.
Right.
So, I found, when working with food service, within the schools, it's a constant battle.
Right.
You one step forward, two steps backwards type of thing.
Yeah.
So,
I think the good news on the restaurant front, I've been pleasantly surprised, is the chefs are actually incredibly passionate about what they're doing. They're actually on a personal level concerned. I just actually was at an event a few nights ago. It was for a not-for-profit called Wellness in the Schools. So, and actually, all their programs are geared towards kind of healthier and sustainable eating in the schools. And it was one of the original people that founded it was Bill Telepan, who has a restaurant in mm-hmm. on the Upper West Side, and he does a great job in terms of his sourcing. And, he brought together like 25 or 26 different chefs from all these restaurants that are all using high quality, sustainable foods. And that, we've interviewed a lot of the chefs and we talk to them closely, and they're incredibly educated on the topic. They're extremely passionate about it. Of course it's not 100% across the board, but a very, very large percentage. And so, they actually do care about what they're mm-hmm. doing.
I mean, it's actually a small percentage. I mean, there's many that care, but, there's actually a small percentage for the amount of graduates that the Culinary Institute's putting
right.
out. A small percentage. I mean, I actually interviewed someone from the Culinary Institute a few months ago, and I was surprised. She said, the courses that have to do with sustainability and sourcing and all those kind of things that I think are so important, they're mostly electives. They're not really required courses, and that's, one of the battles that's going
right.
on in some of these institutions.
Right.
Some people want to make them required and some people don't.
Right. No, definitely. I mean, look, as a food movement, I think we've made incredible progress over the last several years,
mm-hmm.
but there's obviously a long way to go. That's why we're both so passionate about what we're doing.
Right.
I think there's, like I said, I think there's been incredible progress and positive developments, but there's still a lot of areas that need work. And I was actually speaking to somebody the other day from the French Culinary Institute, and they are paying much more attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to have, there's going to be all these different factors that are going to contribute in it, but a big one is obviously customer demand.
Mm-hmm.
The more people that, want it, then it's just,
right.
the merchants are going to have to respond.
Right. Now, do you, in your book, I didn't notice this. Is there a place that also reviews whether people are using sustainable fish? Because I know you have sourced for meat down here.
Right.
But what about with sustainable fish? Because I remember this week I was at Whole Foods, and again, I love Whole Foods, but there's some areas that I think that they need to improve
yeah.
on. For instance, I walked into Whole Foods, and they had 25% off on cod. Okay, well, cod is one of the fish that are in my little, Monterey
mm-hmm.
Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Bright red fish that we're supposed to avoid, cod, because it's being overfished and it's in threat of depletion, and
yeah.
we need to not fish it to give it time to come back. So, you know, when you put a fish on sale, 25% off, when fish is so expensive in general, of course that's going to encourage people to buy this red fish.
Right.
And I asked the fish guy, you know, and of course he was not knowledgeable and didn't know anything. So I didn't really get good answers, but I, you know, plan on taking it a little further and talking to the people up at Whole Foods, because I think that's a real issue. And when I go to restaurants and the only choice is red snapper, which is a fish to avoid, or cod, I'm really in a dilemma, because I do eat fish. I also eat a lot of vegetarian, but if I want to eat fish, I won't eat fish if that's my only choice.
Right.
So, do you get into...
In the front portion, we talk about it, and on the website and through our blog, we're always recommending, like, both, as you said, the Monterey Bay Aquarium and also the Blue Ocean Institute have,
right.
You know, good... They have mobile apps and also printed guides, and so you mm-hmm. could look, you know, what's the most sustainable seafood to eat at this point in time, or the most, you know, the best sushi. And so you could at least kind of find that. And they're trying to improve that tracking system. It's a big job. It's probably one of the more complicated issues out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're definitely pay attention to it. And we're trying, when we speak to restaurants, we're finding out where are they getting their fish? Are they getting their sources? But so we're probably going to look to kind of partner with some of these other organizations that are actually doing a much deeper dive into mm-hmm. the information and where it's coming from, because it is a very complicated issue. But of
yeah.
course, we're very concerned about it, and our goal is to kind of point people to, you know, the easiest way to kind of find the best
right.
sources. And
do you know the organization Chefs Collaborative?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really great one. They're doing a wonderful job in keeping chefs abreast of what foods to use and what foods not to use.
No, absolutely.
So are you said you have plans for a mobile app as well?
Yep, it's in the developmental phase. So I'm very excited about that, because obviously it's just most people are walking around with the mobiles in their hands,
mm-hmm.
myself included. We hope to come out with that sometime within the next few months.
Oh, soon.
Yeah, not very soon. And, you know, we have a lot of ideas. We'll probably come out with an initial version and then really build upon it. We have a lot of ideas to kind of develop that over time, but we're very excited for that to come out.
And will the mobile app be including some of the outer boroughs as well?
Yeah, that's the idea, is to, you know, we definitely plan to do kind of a full version for Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
I get asked all the time, when are you doing Brooklyn? When are you doing Brooklyn? We'll probably do a book version in Brooklyn, because there's so many good restaurants out there that are paying attention to sourcing well. And then we'll probably add, like, the other boroughs. We'll basically add all the, you know, whatever we could find in those boroughs, and those will be on the website and the mobile app.
Mm-hmm. Looking for this one restaurant that I went to from your book that was just the cutest little restaurant. Cortino Bottega Organica.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
It was really great, you know, and I would never have found it. And it was this cute little Italian vegetarian restaurant
mm-hmm.
on Bleecker Street, and you know, the prices were great.
Mm-hmm.
They also had organic wine,
yep.
which, you know, is also such a treat for me to, you know, find a restaurant that has organic wine. They had a cute little, it's kind of like a garden in the back, although it felt like a garden, although it was covered, you know,
right.
because it was cold weather.
Yeah, that's
when
a beautiful
there.
Setting if you go in the nice weather.
Yeah, so I don't know if they open that up in the...
Yeah, they do.
They open it up in
beautiful,
the spring.
Yeah,
ah, or in summer. Great.
So you have to go back.
Cortino Bottega Organica on Bleecker Street. It was great. Yes.
Yeah, and I love that place.
So, you know, it's really you're doing such a great service.
Thank you.
To, you know, provide people with a place to, you know, at least here in New York, you know, and I hope that you can expand to other cities, because, I mean, my listeners right now, I can tell you, are from across the country. I mean, I get emails from people in Pittsburgh, down in North Carolina. You know, I very often, you know, talk a lot about New York and the Long Island area, because that's where I'm located.
Right.
But listeners and people that are caring about the foods and the restaurants are all over the place.
Right.
I know Detroit has a great food movement.
Yeah, and I was actually just in Toronto this past week, and I was so pleasantly surprised. I mean, there's so many great places.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's happening all over, which is great. I mean, our plan is to actually do Brooklyn and LA with it, and by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So to start getting into other cities, and then as we actually expand the mobile, even like once that mobile comes out, because we want to use that as a tool to actually start to build our database of restaurants across the country and even internationally, and use, you know, kind of. Have the community kind of help us. So if you're in Pittsburgh and you know of a few restaurants, like, you know, kind of, it'll be very easy to kind of just enter that into the mobile into your mobile phone or your web or the website, you know. And so we want to start building that national database so we'll have that for anybody that travels right. to these cities or, you know.
Well, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. How do you do that? Like, if you were to open it up for, you know, common people to review,
mm-hmm.
how do you know what someone's judging it on? Because it's amazing how many people think TGIF is the best restaurant in the world.
It's not.
You know what I mean? It's like some people really like Greasy
right.
Spoons. You know, some people really like, to them, fried food is the flavor that they crave. And so when something comes out fried, it's really great. And, you know, something's clean and simple, it's
right.
boring and bland.
Right.
And so, you know, you just look when you know, go on to Yelp and you just,
right.
or what's a Chow Hound, you know, and you see different, the same restaurant being reviewed by different people and how many opinions you have.
Right. Well, we're going to be a much, obviously, more curated segment of the population. So even if somebody enters and suggests a restaurant, like, we'll actually, before we publish that, we'll vet that place to make sure it's meeting our criteria. And then, you know, from a taste perspective, it's going to be a combination of both us kind of from a critical authoritative standpoint, reviewing those places for taste, as many as we can, and especially in the cities that we're doing kind of books in and deeper dives into. But then we also want to kind of blend that, because, you know, we're just one, you know, taste is so subjective, and it, you know, then
right.
we want to blend that and kind of bring in, you know, what are maybe some of the other top guides saying about this restaurant from a taste perspective, what are you know, the users, the community saying about this restaurant, and kind of have that information available. So just like maybe sometimes you'll see with a movie, like critique, you could kind of get the critics' picks, or you could see what, you know, what the users' ratings are
mm-hmm.
and the reviews. And so you could, you know, depending, you know, some people care more about what the critic says, some people care maybe more about what the user says. So we want to kind of blend those different perspectives.
Right.
And then as a consumer, you make the choice of where what's important to you, and you know, and then hopefully you let us know what you think of it. And
right. Because as a matter of fact, today in the New York Times dining section, there's a whole section about, you know, the websites where you can search for recipes. And I use that all the time. You know, I want to do a recipe. You know, I'm one of my favorite things to do when I'm cooking is to create recipes that are real main courses, you know, that substitute one of the vegetarian alternatives, whether it's tofu, tempeh, seitan, or some sort of beans, for a meat-centered meal
mm-hmm.
and make it vegetarian. And, you know, I love playing with that. And so finding recipes on the Internet has been, you know, really wonderful. But they were talking about how so many of the really good recipes, you know, don't even get clicked on. Like, if you're not on the first page or the first
right.
two pages, and that the monopoly of, you know, the Food Network or Recipe.com, or, you know, that they're always the ones that are there first, you know, and that the criteria is really very subjective. That it's not necessarily the best recipes that are coming up.
Right.
It happens to be the one that gets the most clicks.
Best
because
at
those
SEO.
Are, right. They're the ones that, you know, have paid their way
right.
or they're the bigger companies,
right.
so they're up there. And so sometimes I'll just automatically go to, like, start at page 5, you know, and just skip the first couple pages just so I can get to some of the smaller recipes and, you know,
right.
Experience someone that's not, you know, the Food Network.
Right. No, of course. I mean, one of the things we are also have in the works is we're working on a book that actually takes the beginning portion of the Clean Plates Manhattan book and expands upon that philosophy and makes it more accessible to a wider audience, and also includes, as opposed to including restaurants in a particular city, we're going to include, just create all of our own recipes, and then we'll also bring in, like, recipes from the different chefs that we've come across in our travels. I mean, because up until this point, I've we've researched over 400 restaurants. I've personally eaten at over 175. And so, you know, we're developing good relationships with a lot of these chefs. So, and a lot of the ones that inspired us are maybe some of our favorite dishes. So we'll want to incorporate their recipes, but also a lot of our own. So just make it really easy for people to find just really good, healthy, sustainable, delicious recipes and that are simple, easy to execute. And then we'll, you know, have a kind of a companion website that will build upon that. And
that will be fun.
Yeah.
When are you hoping for that to come out?
It's in the works.
It's in the works.
Probably okay. After the mobile app, but sometime next year, I hope.
Uh-huh. So in your philosophy and the work that you do with private clients in consulting, what do you usually find most helpful in inspiring people to, you know, change the way that they're eating? Is it the fear tactic, or is it the environmental tactic, or is it just the health tactic?
Yeah, I think it is very individual. Different people are motivated by different things. I'm not a personal fan of using fear as motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Although, and you know, some instances it's appropriate and makes sense. For me, the thing I try to get across most is, because what I've come to see is that, you know, I think personal health is actually probably the biggest motivator for people. And even, you know, even though environment is important, and I think, you know, there's a certain segment of the population that's extremely motivated by that, but I think still people are very personally motivated. We're a very narcissistic species at this point in our evolution, unfortunately. But I also what I see is, even though people are motivated by personal health, in some ways it's like, okay, I want to eat healthier today so I avoid disease or I live longer. It's kind of the goal is too far away. And so what I try to do is get people more in touch with kind of the immediate benefits of, hey, look, if you eat healthier, that's not the end game. It's not like your goal in life is to eat healthy. The goal is actually to live to your fullest potential, to have the best life possible, and try to get people in touch with the reality that actually, if you do eat better foods, if you eat healthier, you actually function at a much higher level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you're free of, you know, kind of different symptoms that are, you know, kind of frustrating and annoying and problematic, but you have more energy, you have more clarity of mind, you're just able to be the best that you can be. I mean, of course, there's other things besides just the food that you eat. There's, you know, the other things to a healthy lifestyle. But in general, if you commit yourself to kind of living a healthier lifestyle, and with food included, you actually perform better at whatever you do,
mm-hmm.
whatever that means. If that means being the best mom that you could be, or being, you know, the best doctor you could be, or just, you know, the best musician, whatever it means for you, you know, the best activist, you could actually have the ability to do that. And to
mm-hmm.
me, that's the most important thing.
Right. I agree with you. You know, one of the other things that I talked about when I made this presentation this weekend was just how our food choices are connected to so many of the ills that are plaguing our world, you know, whether it's the economy or our health as a nation or the environment. And so when you start to choose healthier foods, it's really, it's such a big global statement. It's not only you're helping yourself, but you're helping everybody, you know, and the earth. And so you're taking everybody along with you. So and you just mentioned being active as well, you know, taking on some activism. And I think, you know, all of us need to do more of that. You know?
Yeah, and I think that could come in a lot of different forms. And, you know, for some people, they might get involved politically. I mean, for me, I use my kind of entrepreneurial experience as a way to do it and contribute to change. And for some people, it could be simply, you know, kind of doing it within your own family or your own small community.
So, Jared, before we get sent off here, I hear my music coming on. I would like to let people know about you and where they can find you. You want to share your website with them?
Sure.
And your email?
Yep, absolutely. It's my website is cleanplates.com, www.cleanplates.com, and my email is just Jared, Jared, at cleanplates.com.
Okay, everybody, and thank you again. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green. You can find me at Bhavani, Bhavani, at iegreen.com. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you.